A small state university campus in a town by the edge of the state. That describes Ashland, Oregon. It also describes Presque Isle, Maine. And our next guest just moved from one town to the other. Linda Schott is the new this summer president of Southern Oregon University. She took the job after several years as president of the University of Maine at Presque Isle. She still has to wait another couple of weeks for the regular academic year to begin. No doubt she's been a little busy even without many students around. President Linda Schott joins us for a first visit to the exchange. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. So what made you decide to enter the sweepstakes for the job at SOU in the first place?
I had been looking for a possible opportunity, and my husband and I love the western part of the United States. We enjoyed getting to know the Northeast, but we knew, having lived in Colorado and my husband had lived in Oregon, that we really liked this part of the country. So I was sort of softly on the lookout for a university that seemed to fit me. And when we saw the opening here, actually we saw it a couple of years ago and thought, oh, there's something that might be interesting. And then we were happy when we saw it pop up again.
How unusual or not is it to have students take part in the selection process for a new president as they did here at SOU?
I don't think that's unusual at all. It certainly was in the previous search I was in as well.
You had not been at the University of Maine Presque Isle terribly long, 4 years or so. How different was it when you left from what you found when you got there?
I think we did a lot of tremendous work while I was there. We did a strategic plan, refocused the mission. We became one of the first universities in the country to fully adopt what is in Maine is called proficiency-based education. And that really earned us a huge amount of state, regional, and even national publicity. The enrollment had stabilized and was starting to grow. We fixed up the physical plant. It had been somewhat neglected. So we made a lot of good progress. And while I was very excited to come here, I was also sad to leave there.
A somewhat smaller school than SOU, is that right? I mean, somewhat under 2,000 enrollment?
Mm-hmm. Yes, about 1,200 students. Mm-hmm. When I got there, I asked about enrollment, and everybody said, oh, it's about 1,400. But in fact, when I got the numbers, it had been steadily declining, and I realized that we had a real issue we needed to confront.
So you're coming to a campus that's about, I don't know, three times that size, maybe a little more. What are the things that impress you when you first look at Southern Oregon University that made it a viable choice for a place to live?
Well, I think in terms of the university, the physical plant here is in much better shape. It's not that we don't have some areas, such as this building. Central Hall that needs some updating, but that in fact is in front of, will be going in front of the, it's in the budget for this year, next year to be approved. So the physical plant is in much better condition here. I was curious when I came to interview to see how the faculty and the staff would be given the problems that the university had gone through in the previous few years.
Retrenchment and things like that.
Retrenchment, yes. Votes of no confidence. Those are always traumatic events for a campus. And I was really pleasantly surprised that I found people who were like, okay, that's behind us. We're ready to move forward. So that's been a very, very pleasant surprise. And then we just already love living in Southern Oregon and really enjoy Ashland and Medford and the whole Rogue Valley.
Within the confines of campus, what are the things that fall into the diamond needs polishing category?
We've got to finish the problems that occurred with the new science building, get those finally finished.
You got some noise issues with the neighbors and stuff?
Yep. So that, I think, I heard the other day that that's a bit delayed, but it's on tap to be remedied, and we certainly want to do that. This building and then the new JPR building and the theater, those projects need to move ahead. The McNeil Pavilion that the students are helping to fund, that needs to get finished. So they're not really diamonds that need polishing as much as just projects that need to get done.
As you assess the current structure of public higher education in Oregon, in which there's no chancellor, there's no centralized system anymore, and a local board to answer to, I mean, what opportunities does that present, and what challenges does that present to the president of a smaller campus like Southern Oregon University?
Well, I think it's an amazing opportunity, and it was one of the most attractive things about this job. It's very rare that you can go in as a president and have a new board. So what we have here is a longstanding institution with a lot of wonderful traditions and history, but we also have an opportunity to sort of make it anew with this new board and with the independence from the state. So I think one of my big challenges and opportunities is to work with the board and make sure that the campus and I are working with the board as well and as smoothly, and that they are working very effectively together. The dangers, of course, are that, you know, it's like a teenager growing up, I guess. We're on our own now, and we have to make sure that we are strong financially, that we're sustainable. My belief is always if you keep the core of the institution strong, you're doing a really good job of teaching and helping students learn, that the other problems or the other parts of the campus sort of take care of themselves. So we will be focusing a lot on that core mission and then simultaneously making sure that we're keeping the finances in good order, keeping our employees, you know, with good morale. And
so what then do you see as the core mission of Southern Oregon University? It's gone through a few transmogrifications over the last decade or so.
Well, that's what I want to have a conversation with the campus about in the coming year. When I talked about it a minute ago, I just meant we're here to teach students. That's why universities exist. And sometimes we forget that, you know. As far as a precise mission, I think the campus and the community need to have that, communities need to have that discussion. We can be a lot of different things, but it's really important that we settle on one. But we have to do that in a context of thinking about higher education. It can't be simply inward looking. We have to think about the future of higher education because it's changing very, very quickly. No one really knows where it's headed, but we need to be aware of the trends and then think about how we want to position this institution in that larger realm.
Linda Schott is the president of Southern Oregon University, has been for a couple of months now, waiting for students to arrive in a couple of weeks. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we explore the present and future of SOU with the president. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So the role of higher education, huge issue, not just for this campus, but for all. I mean, we've reached a point in history when the generally accepted wisdom seems to be you get further with a college degree, but the also accepted wisdom is, God, it costs a lot. So how do you reconcile those and convince people who might be on the fence about going into higher education, going to school, to do so?
Well, I think that people really need to think about what they want out of their lives. You know, it used to be sort of a truism, everybody should have a college education. I'm not convinced that that is true. I think there are lots of different types of learners, and different types of educational experience are appropriate for those different types of learners. We know that it does serve a certain population well. So if people want a professional career, then they need to have a four-year degree. And yes, it costs quite a bit, although I believe the average debt of an SOU graduate is between $25,000 and $30,000. That's basically the price of most new cars. So it's not an outrageous amount at an institution like SOU.
And then how do you make the case specifically for SOU and its offerings?
Well, that's part of what we need to figure out over the coming year. We've got good, solid programs. I think we just need to decide how we're going to focus and move ahead to make it even more attractive to the students that we do need to serve.
We can certainly make some apples-to-apples comparisons between a job just passed and job you just took. How does the public funding, though, for example, compare in Maine's system with what you have in Oregon? Because Oregon has certainly slid in the last 25 years.
I think it's slid all over the country. What we've really seen is a divestment in public education or from public education by states. Many reasons for that, many demands on the funds that states have. But that's put the burden on students and their families. So in Maine, the governor and the legislature very much wanted the University of Maine system to hold tuition flat. So we did that for 5 years.
5 years, no tuition raises.
That's right. And while it was good for students and their families, it was really difficult for the campuses. So I hope we don't go exactly that route here. I mean, we want to control costs, but we also have to make sure that the campuses are able to support their facilities and their staff.
What was the recent history of program offerings at the University of Maine, Presque Isle? Had they stayed the same? Had there been anything like the retrenchment there was at SOU? I mean, what sorts of things had happened during your tenure there?
None happened during my tenure. There had been some prior to my going there. One of the things I love about SOU is that we have the full complement of the arts. When I got to UMPI, they had cut, before I got there, theater and music, and all they had left were the visual arts. And that made me sad. I really enjoy the arts. So they had also reduced political science. They had reduced philosophy. We really took the approach when I was president of not doing that. But we did, as faculty were retiring, we had to not rehire in some cases. So we were very thinly staffed.
Talk about the retiring part of the picture just in general, because you've got a whole generation of baby boomer professors now heading for the door if they haven't done so already in a lot of cases. So you have certainly the challenge of a lot of institutional memory lost, but also in the opportunity certainly to hire some newer people. But are the newer people out there available? Are they as good as the people you're parting with?
Well, it's always a trade-off between the wisdom that you've accumulated over the years and the people coming fresh out of school who know the latest theories. Yes, there are plenty of people out there. There's no shortage of folks with PhDs, and we are at least currently planning to do several hires here over the next year to replace people who have been lost.
Grab your headphones. We're going to invite some people to join us on the exchange. This is the Jefferson Exchange. Linda Schott is the president of Southern Oregon University, joining us for the first time since she came to campus just a few months ago. You can join us on the exchange to talk about the present and future of SOU. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Derek and Talent, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to correct something. I think it would be accurate what Linda said. You don't necessarily need to, you don't need to go to college, depending on your profession. There are certainly professional, jobs that certainly wouldn't require, education. I think namely of trades work, building trades in particular. But then I also wanted to make a comment that, it seems like it certainly was the case for me that I used college to grow up, which is an awfully expensive way to become an adult, and it seems like service out of high school in some manner, any manner, might be more beneficial to children who are coming out of high school before choosing to go to college and deciding what one wants to do for the rest of one's life. And I'll just listen on the air. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for that, Derek. Appreciate that. So service after high school before college. It certainly helped me to take a gap year. I got a lot more mature and appreciated learning a lot more once I did become a college freshman. What do you advocate? What do you think about time spent between high school and college potentially?
Well, again, I think it goes back to the learner, his or herself, and their families. The families should not feel compelled to send a student to college. We do see a lot of students who come to a college or university, and they aren't there for their own motivation. They're there because somebody told them it's the next step. And I think in general, students are better served if they wait until they have that desire to go. I have a son who's sitting out. I actually have a couple of sons who are sitting out for a while, and they're doing that with my full support because I want them to be ready and really engaged when they do go.
You want to be motivated when they're students.
Absolutely.
I had a chance to go down the rabbit hole and look at numbers on things like retention rate and graduation rate and some comparisons between University of Maine, Presque Isle, Southern Oregon University, and then some bigger campuses like University of Oregon and Oregon State. And it seems like at the smaller schools in particular, it's a little hard to get the graduation rate above 40% and tough to get the retention rate above 70%. Does that seem like a pretty typical set of numbers?
Yes, and part of that is because because of the way those numbers are calculated. They're based upon first-time students in any college, and many of our students who come to these kinds of institutions have been to community college. They've been out in the workplace, then they come back, and so the numbers get a bit skewed. There's another measure that's being developed called the student achievement measure that is more appropriate for these kinds of institutions.
The state of Oregon has put some measures in place, though, to in a sense, reward the institutions if they can retain and they can graduate on time and that sort of thing. So does that work a little counter to what the usual pathway is for a student that comes to a place like SOU?
It puts the burden on the institution to do a better job, and we certainly want to do everything we can to help students come and complete. But the truth is that students have lives, and sometimes it's nothing that we can do. It has to do with their own funding, or maybe they're married, maybe they have kids. I mean, there are other responsibilities that tend to draw students away.
When you look at the, not only the kinds of people who would come to SOU, but where they would come from, I mean, it seems like there's a lot of people who do come from the immediate Rogue Valley area to SOU. Are they often people who might be on the fence about college, might not, you know, wouldn't have put the money into going to a larger place like the University of Oregon or OSU?
I don't know enough yet about our students. I think that often students who are attracted here are those who have gone to smaller high schools and want a small experience, and this is one of the things that we excel at SOU, and we did at UMPI as well, as small class size, low faculty-student ratio. So students can come to a place like this and really have contact directly with full-time faculty and full-time staff, not with graduate assistants as they do at many of the larger institutions. So it's really, again, what does the learner want?
The University of Maine system boss, as he was saying his regretful farewell to you, had pointed out that UMPI, University of Maine Presque Isle, was a leader in personalized education. What did he mean by that?
We were on the forefront of developing proficiency-based, sometimes called competency-based, mastery-based education at the university level. That has to be put in context. In Maine, in 2012, the state legislature passed a law that required all K through 12 to transition to this form of education. I got there soon after, and my insight was, wow, K through 12 is making this change. It's a fundamentally different way to teach students. And a lot of those students then would be coming to university, and they would expect that same form of teaching. So trying to give students more say in how they learn and how they best demonstrate their learning, trying to respect their pace of learnings, not that all students learn at exactly the same speed, and really looking at what students learn, not just how much time they sit in a chair in a classroom.
How important does technology become as you go further into higher education into the future? Because we're talking about, I think it was Eagle Point, we talked to the superintendent maybe 2 years ago about having iPads for every one of the kindergartners there. So we're not only talking digital natives, we're talking kids who've had digital devices in classrooms since they began school, coming down your campus fairly soon.
Right? That's right. And if they come to our campus and we don't have the technology they expect, that will be a turnoff for them. I think technology is going to be critical. And that's one of the things that we have to talk about in the coming year when we talk about the future of higher education. What does it look like? How does technology figure into it? The research that I've looked at shows that hybrid education, where students are doing some face-to-face and some online, is actually the most effective in terms of long-term learning.
Are there any opportunities? I mean, granted, you haven't been here during the regular academic year yet, but are there some things that if you've spent, you know, evenings going through filing cabinets or computer files looking at all kinds of paperwork to indicate what's been going on here, but do you have a sense for obvious things that make you go, oh, we could be doing this, and we could do this for very little money and very little time?
Not really yet. I've asked a lot of questions. Just the other day, I think the provost is getting tired of seeing emails from me already, because when I was interviewed, I said people have described me as an idea hamster. And it's true. I read a lot, I think a lot, and I come up with ideas. They're not all good, and so they need other people to vet them. But So I'm constantly on the lookout for new things that, and I have to ask, have we considered this here? Sometimes it will have already been considered and rejected as not appropriate for some reason, but I will be asking a lot of questions.
An idea hamster. That's a good expression. Were the winters in Presque Isle, Maine, any factor in looking for another place to live?
Maybe just a little. I grew up in Texas. So seeing snow at all was very unusual to move to where there were 150 inches a year. I think the only reason my husband and I survived it is because the president's house was right on campus and they shoveled the snow, so he didn't have to do any.
Ah, okay. That is a bit of a benefit. You know, as I look at your own CV and where you've been, I mean, you got MA and PhD both from Stanford. Is that right? Do you think you'd like to run a campus that size at some point in the future? I mean, do you have an ultimate goal set that, I mean, yeah, you're at SOU now. You just got here. You don't want to talk about the future necessarily, but, I mean, is there a long-term plan here?
This pretty much is my long-term plan. Of course, that all depends on how I do, how the campus feels that I do. But I think I'm going to like it here very much and would like to stay long enough to feel like I've really made a significant impact. And then at some point, I want to retire and I want to go off and do something completely different. I have a ranch in Texas. I plan to go back there at least for some of the winters. And who knows? I've got 4 children. As soon as they start having grandkids, I'm going to want to be where I can see those grandkids and the kids themselves, of course. So, no, I don't really have aspirations. This is a great size campus for me, I think.
Once you get to a new place and the official tours and the orientations and the meet this person, meet that person stuff is over, what was the first place you went to by yourself?
Oh, have I been anywhere by myself yet? I'm not entirely sure. I go to the ladies' room by myself. That seems like it's about it. It has been a jam-packed month of having lunch with lots of wonderful people. I've met most of the board members.
All right, and classes begin at the end of the month at Southern Oregon University, so a whole new academic year looming for Linda Schott, the new president of Southern Oregon University. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks for having me.